If you bought a home purely to study the paranormal, what would you do when it started studying you back? How would you react if the very first night in your new home ended with violent banging from an empty closet? What would you do if your partner saw a silent screaming woman appear in midair in your home? Could you live peacefully in a house where voices call your name in your own voice? We may not find the answers to these questions on this episode, but that sure as hell will not stop us trying on today's Dark Paranormal.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal with Kevin Eustace.
Hello everyone and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal Episode 7. That means we're only 3 episodes away from the end of this season, and genuinely it feels like only yesterday when we began. They do say change is as good as a break, and maybe it's the changes we've implemented that have made this season feel like the fastest season to date. But anyway, today we have an experience for you from one of our former submitters. A former submitter who is dedicated to evidence. But before we jump into today's experience, a quick reminder, we are receiving submissions right now for next season. You will find the link in the show notes, or you can go direct to thedarkparanormal.com/submitmyexperience. Also, within our show notes, you can find a link to our Patreon, where you can gain access to a free week trial at our highest tier, and therefore gain access to early ad-free releases and our entire back catalogue of our Patreon-only show, Dark Bites, where once a week for 30 minutes, we take a look at some of the shorter experiences that have landed in our inbox that are too short for a main show or a mini-sode, or sometimes something which straddles neither. In addition to that show, we've added a video and audio show after dark where I theorize some ideas about some of the things we've heard, and also just last week we introduced a Patreon-only chat, and that chat allows our patrons to discuss both theories, episodes, and anything else in the world of the weird they feel they want to bring to attention. And again, the link's in the show notes, or go direct to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, for the 7th time this season, please lower the lights, make yourself comfortable, and most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door as we hear all about the haunted experiment. Hi Kev, it's Dr. Steve again. I have a few more experiences I'd like to share, which are a little more intense than my previous ones. These all take place at a 140-year-old house in a small town, population of 71, in the Ozark Mountains in Missouri. After my first few years of paranormal investigating, I became concerned that some locations may be enhancing their haunting. I also wanted to spend just a few days at a location where I hadn't given myself sufficient time to properly learn the house, its history, or the neighborhood. With that in mind, I began searching for a haunted location to buy that could serve as my paranormal lab of sorts. After a couple of years of online searching, I came across a haunted bed and breakfast for sale in a town I'd never heard of, about 550 miles from our home in Alabama, roughly a 9 to 10 hour drive. My wife, Judy, graciously agreed to visit the location for at least an overnight stay, so we could see if it might be what I was looking for. I contacted the owners and made our reservation for mid-November 2018. As we drove to Missouri, we spent a lot of time talking about how ridiculous it would be to buy a supposedly haunted house from people we didn't know, in a town we'd never heard of. Even if we loved it, would making the 9 to 10 hour drive on a regular basis be sustainable? What if the house wasn't even haunted? Or if the activity died down after we purchased it? What would our family and friends think, considering we're Christians living in the Bible Belt? In brackets, the southeast and south central part of the US, close brackets. Where the paranormal is often equated with demons or mental issues. Once we reached our destination and pulled into the gravel driveway, we were both blown away. The home was a beautiful two-story Queen Anne-style house, turret and all, just setting out in the middle of nowhere. There were two massive barren oak trees in the front yard, which added significantly to the haunted vibe. Well, we instantly fell in love with the house, but at the same time, we realized that we were probably a little giddy from the drive and full of that nervous energy that wells up when you're doing something you know isn't rational. We felt sure after spending a night there and getting some rest, reality would set in and we would see things far more clearly the next day. We were greeted at the front door by the owners. They were a gracious, middle-aged couple who ran the B&B, although they themselves lived in a house about 10 miles away. After we got settled in, they gave us a tour of the house and land, and then shared some of their own personal experiences of hauntings in the house. They'd bought the home 3 years earlier, when it was already a fairly well-known, at least locally, haunted bed and breakfast. While they said they really loved the place, they were starting to have some health issues, and they felt the house was becoming too large for them to manage. The stories they shared sounded too good to be true. We assumed that they were embellishing some, since there aren't a lot of people interested in buying a 140-year home in a town of 71 people. They also informed us that they would be leaving essentially all of the furniture, including several antiques. Once they decided to head home, Judy and I explored the house in more detail, admiring the craftsmanship of the home and looking for potential problem areas that may not have been mentioned by the owners. After that, I investigated alone for a few hours, while Julie retired to the upstairs master bedroom. My investigation was fruitless, and neither Judy nor I felt anything dark or ominous that night. We both thought we may have heard footsteps in the hall at separate times, and once Judy thought she heard a metal wheel, like an old hospital gurney, squeaking down the upstairs hall. Now, while those sounds were interesting, they may have simply been the house settling or our imaginations getting the best of us. Definitely nothing to prove the house was truly haunted. The next morning, we briefly visited again with the owners, then we said our goodbyes and headed back to Alabama. As we set off, we both still had that inexplicable feeling that we were being drawn to this house despite there being no sane reason why. There'd been no significant paranormal activity. We had no connections to the area, no family nor friends there, and it would be both inconvenient and expensive to maintain and repair the house and land. Nevertheless, we decided before we got back to Alabama that we would in fact make an offer. We agreed that if after a year the haunting was just a hoax, or if the travel and expense was too much, we'd sell the place and try to be a little wiser going forward. I need to say a little about the house and its history before proceeding. The property was first settled in 1859 by a Reverend McComb and his wife Emily. both Emily, aged 40, and one of their sons, age 5, died on the property and are buried in the backyard, along with a few unknown individuals, all before 1880. Three doctors had lived there, and they saw patients on the property. In brackets, two in the current house and one in the original house, close brackets. Two of the doctors were also the county coroners and may have performed autopsies in that building. Four owners have died in the current home, three in the master bedroom and one just inside the entryway. In 1885, the current home was built of concrete made from limestone harvested on the land. The walls are approximately 14 inches thick and have held up well over time. The house is two stories and about 2,000 square feet in size. There are wet weather springs that run under the house. The Ozark Aquifer lies beneath it as well. The property has changed hands many times. We would be the 26th owners. The house was abandoned for a short time and then purchased again in 2013 by a couple who opened it as a historic bed and breakfast. After a few months, they changed it to a haunted bed and breakfast because guests were leaving in the middle of the night due to strange activity occurring. They sold the house 2 years after buying it because the wife allegedly saw the husband's doppelganger and she refused to ever step foot in that house again after that incident. But back to our story. Unsurprisingly, our offer was accepted, and by mid-December 2018, that house was ours. Given the busyness of the holidays and work, we didn't go back to the house until after Christmas. But we were so excited on the drive up to Missouri, and it seemed both surreal and foolish that we'd actually bought the place. As we got maybe an hour away from the house, we both began to feel a little more anxious than we had from our initial trip. We attributed that to the thought of spending our first night as owners in this old house out in the middle of nowhere, and possibly to second-guessing our decision to some degree. Just before midnight, we pulled into the driveway and immediately noticed it didn't feel quite as warm and inviting as it had before. Probably just nerves and fatigue from the drive, we both thought. Once we unpacked and got settled in, I was exhausted and ready for bed. Judy was equally tired, but much more alert as the vibe we were getting put her into a hypervigilant state. We stayed in the master bedroom, again where three owners have died in the past. The bed was positioned in the back corner of the room, facing a door to a pass-through closet. The kind of closet that joined two bedrooms, sort of like a Jack and Jill layout with a bathroom. This door was original to the house. It had a jagged hole in it at about head height. The latch was missing in the door jamb, so that while the door would remain closed, it was by no means secure. I was laying in bed nearest the corner of the two concrete walls, while Judy was sitting up in bed next to me with the nightstand lamp turned on, scrolling through her phone, trying to distract herself and relax. For me, fatigue won out over my apprehension, and I fell asleep rather quickly. Julie figured she'd be lucky if she slept at all. I'd been asleep a few minutes when I awoke to the sound of five loud bangs, which seemed to have come from the closet door, which Julie immediately verified. I grabbed my .357 revolver and headed slowly to the closet, expecting to see an intruder. Given the violence of the banging, I didn't even think about the paranormal. when I saw the closet was empty, I searched the entire upstairs and found nothing. I went downstairs and saw the front door, which was the only working door at the time, was still deadbolt locked, and our security system was still armed. Money goals are things we all have. My personal one is to make sure that I'm mortgage free by age 50. How am I getting towards that goal? I'm 46, and in 4 years, do I think I'm going to get there? Well, I'm unfoundedly optimistic. But here's the most interesting thing. We only like to talk about money when we've made it, when that goal is achieved. Now, you've probably got a well-being app. Well, Acorns is a financial wellness app that wants to show a little love to everyone who's on their way to a goal. Some people shy away from the word investing because it seems like it's a word for people who know about finance, etc. Believe me, that's not a prerequisite. Acorns is a smart way to give your money a chance to grow. Acorns is easy. You can sign up in minutes and start automatically investing your money, even if you've just got spare change. Acorns supports your big and small goals across every life stage. Plus, the app has the Acorns Potential screen, which shows you the power of compounding and how your money could grow over time. Acorns is an all-in-one. No more finance apps cluttering up your phone. With Acorns, you can invest, save, and give your money a chance to grow in one trusted place. Believe me, I've never seen something like the Acorns Potential screen showing the power of compounding. And even that word, compounding, we all believe that belongs to the ones who work in Wall Street. It doesn't. It's yours as much as theirs. So sign up now and Acorns will boost your new account with a £5 bonus investment. Join the over 14 million all-time customers who already have saved and invested over $27 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app to get started.
Paid non-client endorsements. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 11 compensation provided. Potential subject to various factors such as customers' accounts, age and investment settings. Does not include Acorns fees. Results do not predict or represent the performance of any Acorns portfolio. Investment results will vary. Investment involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC and SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal.
I ran back upstairs to Judy, worried that I'd left my wife alone in a room with something that was apparently angry. Trying to be rational, I checked the closet again to see if I'd missed anything, but it was still completely empty. I told Judy that maybe something fell in the attic, and I'd go up in the morning to check it out. Judy, who'd thankfully been awake during all of this, was certain that the noise had came from the closet in front of us and not from overhead. Well, I was at a loss for answers. I couldn't help but think of the irony of having never been scared anywhere investigating the paranormal, only to get scared to the point of shaking on my very first night in my new paranormal lab. After a few more hours, fatigue managed to get the best of me and I fell asleep again. But again, this was to be short-lived. Just after 4 a.m, I was awakened by a male's voice loudly exhaling into my right ear, while simultaneously having my pillow pushed 3 to 4 inches forward. I sat up straight in bed, looking all around, but I saw nothing. Judy was thankfully asleep, and she only stirred a little when I bolted up. After this second event, fear overrode fatigue. Sleep was no longer an option, and I spent the next few hours wondering when the next welcoming act from these spirits would occur, and exactly what it would be. I even had some second guesses about what I was getting into with this house. The remainder of that trip was uneventful, and we were soon heading back to Alabama, trying to process everything that had occurred. Since the house had given me the worst fright of my adult life, I decided to return to it alone for a weekend 2 weeks later to face my fears. For 2 nights, I stayed in that master bedroom as before, once leaving the lamp on, and once staying in pitch darkness. Nothing occurred either night. The house couldn't have been more peaceful nor comfortable. And so began the roller coaster of emotions associated with living in a haunted house. It can be both warm and inviting, and terrifying and cold in the span of a mere few hours. Similar to your weather in the UK. In the 8 years we've owned the home, over 90% of the time it's calm and normal. But that other 10% can be quite intense. A few months after we bought it, we were at the house for a full week, mostly cleaning, making minor repairs, etc. One afternoon, whilst I was excavating the backyard, Judy brought me some water. She said she thought she saw someone in a mirror by the door as she was coming out, but she figured it was just light shining through a window playing tricks on her. I agreed, and I asked her for another bottle. When she went back into the house, everything felt fine, until she entered the dining room between the entryway and the kitchen. The atmosphere felt heavy and uncomfortable. About midway into the dining room, she said an oval opened up at about head height, and an old woman appeared in it from the shoulders up, with her hands raised by the side of her head. It looked like the lady was screaming, but there was no sound. The lady was monochromatic, black and white, but crystal clear. And after a few seconds, the oval closed and the lady was gone. Judy ran back outside and told me about what she'd just seen. I ran in and set up some equipment and I began investigating. But of course, I caught nothing. This message the lady had was apparently for Judy and Judy alone. The next day, I was in the back of the house, in an old sleeping porch, and Judy was in the kitchen, which is adjacent to that porch. I heard a loud bang and Judy cried out. When she'd opened the refrigerator door, a large iced tea decanter had fell, which had been sitting on the top of the refrigerator since we bought the house. It had fallen and hit her on the shoulder. Ordinarily, I would think that since floors in old houses are uneven, the decanter must have slowly wobbled to the front over time and fell naturally. However, I replaced it that day, and in over 7 years since, it's never wobbled out of position. Not even when I stomp on the floor near the refrigerator. Shortly after this event, a medium told us there's a matriarch spirit who doesn't like a new matriarch in the house. Perhaps a spirit pushed that decanter onto Judy, more to assert dominance than to actually hurt her. If that's the case, I think Judy has made peace with her, as no other possible physical attacks have occurred since then. On one trip, we'd arrived after midnight and we were unloading our car as usual. I was in the house dropping off my first load whilst Julie was at the back of the SUV gathering her things. As I came out of the house, I saw her jump back and scream. When I asked what had happened, she said she saw a man dressed in all black rush from the front of our car towards her, only to disappear when she jumped back. He was dressed in all black, and each article of clothing, pants, shirt, vest, tie, coat, were all distinct. His face was black too, but featureless, like a stocking was over it. Since then, others have seen this figure too, between the milk shed and the house, and in the backyard family cemetery. We've both heard our names called out frequently, sometimes in our own voices, sometimes in unfamiliar ones. We will hear conversations upstairs or the sound of furniture moving. Yet when inspected, no one is there and nothing's out of place. Shadow figures are seen walking the upstairs hallway and going from the parlour downstairs into the old doctor's office. We've seen a solid black ghost cat too, and heard the sound of a ghost dog on a variety of different occasions in a variety of rooms. One of the previous owners did animal rescues whilst he lived here, so hopefully any ghost pets have good memories of their time in this house. Personally, I've seen 6 different apparitions, 2 in full colour, the rest monochromatic. One is a little boy who I've seen multiple times. He always seems to be watching me, trying to figure out why I'm in his home. And I always see him while I'm not actively investigating. We don't know for certain who any of these spirits are. But one owner did lose a 6-year-old son, 1 year after moving away from the home. And there are reports of children who were patients here passing away in the house. I have heard soft, swift footsteps, like a child running around my bed just after laying down for the night. And I have felt someone firmly kicking the centre of my mattress from beneath my bed when I'm alone in the room. Fortunately, when I looked under the bed, no one was there. But it did make for a restless night. While Judy prefers to sleep in our ghost-free room downstairs, which was added to the exterior around 2000, I prefer to sleep upstairs, primarily in the master bedroom. This is the most active room in the house. But still, most nights are uneventful. Some of my personal experiences in there include seeing a full-body apparition of an older lady in Victorian clothing standing by a dresser, having someone sit on my bed for 10-plus seconds whilst I was in it, even feeling their butt against my thigh and feeling the mattress dent in, seeing a young African-American boy holding a drum and smiling at me while I lay in bed, and experiencing my only case of sleep paralysis in my entire life. I was on my back with my hands behind my head when I became aware I couldn't raise my right elbow, which was the one closest to the wall. The other elbow moved just fine. As I stared to my right, I saw a black tornado with the wide part closest to me slowly spinning clockwise and extending out of the wall closer and closer to me. I stared at it for a moment and said, "I'm not scared." I definitely was, though. "You can't hurt me. I'm a child of God." It stopped spinning for a moment. Then it reversed its direction and then turned into the wall. Now, as a doctor, I'm well aware of the medical community's explanation for sleep paralysis. But in my professional opinion, it doesn't always adequately explain it away. It's reasonable to consider that some cases of sleep paralysis may be purely physiological, while others may have an otherworldly component to them, one that we don't fully understand. The last story I'll mention occurred one night after Judy had retired to her safe room. I told her I was going upstairs to investigate and sleep, and we said our goodnights. As I got to the stairs, I got an overwhelming feeling I shouldn't go up. I was both embarrassed and caught off guard. I thought, "This is ridiculous. There's nothing dangerous up there. This is my house." Nevertheless, I decided to stay downstairs another 15 minutes, assuming this feeling would pass. When I went back to the stairs, the feeling returned. I thought, "This is crazy," and I placed my foot on the first step, only to have the feeling intensify. Once again, I took my tail between my legs and I stayed downstairs for a further 15 minutes. As I returned to the stairs for a third time, so did the feeling. So I forced myself to move onto the first step. But the feeling again worsened and was accompanied this time by intense nausea. At this point, I decided my body or subconscious knew something that my brain didn't. So I joined Judy in our ghost-free room for the night. But I always wonder what would have happened had I gone up there. The rational doctor and the reluctant believer were in strong disagreement that night about the right course of action. In hindsight, I think I chose wisely. Judy and I have both noticed at this house and at other sites we've investigated, there's often a palpable change in the environment before activity. Our bodies seem to detect this before our brains do. My body, or perhaps some guide, for lack of a better word, may have been trying to protect me from something I was not prepared to experience. I guess I'll never know. After 8 years of experimenting in a paranormal lab, I'll have to say my list of questions is growing at a much faster rate than my list of answers. I will email a few pictures of the house and some of the rooms to include to you if you'd like. As always, thank you so much for all the work you do. The quality and quantity of your work is amazing. Sincerely, Dr. Steve. And Dr. Steve has included some information that I don't think I can share, just about what and where the place is. He's also mentioned he's attempted to send the videos in 3 separate times, but I'm not receiving them, which is the case. So Steve, if you're listening now, Dr. Steve, sorry, please send them once more to contact@thedarkparanormal.com. Failing that, the old address, thedarkparanormal@hotmail.com, is still available. So please try both of those, and once I receive them, I'll let you know. But if you don't hear back from me after sending them, say, 7 days later, reach out to see if I have. Now, when it comes down to me breaking down this episode, breaking down Dr. Steve's experiences, there's no room for validators. Believe me, we've spoke to Dr. Steve before. This man is 100% legit. He's actually, and I don't mean to blow smoke, Dr. Steve, but you're a hero of mine. Somebody who went from skeptic to believer, or should I say, was kind of forced to go from skepticism to belief, and then bought a haunted place to investigate, to carry out investigations in. Now, if there's not a book in that, I don't know what there is. Your point of view and how you explain things is excellent. It makes me think about certain things also. But I will say, this episode will leave me with one terrifying image. And that's the image seen by Judy of an oval appearing in midair and an elderly lady holding her hands to her ears and screaming a silent scream. I can visualize it now, and I really don't want to. But I do want to thank you, Dr. Steve, for your amazing experience you've sent through. Now, don't forget, if you have your own true paranormal experience that you would like to be heard on The Dark Paranormal, we are still receiving submissions for our next season. Now, yes, we have all of those slots filled, but we are a fluid show, and should the right experience arrive, it will go in. It's that simple. The link, of course, is in the show notes, or go direct to thedarkparanormal.com/submit my experience. And, of course, you can find the link to our Patreon in the show notes too. But until next time, remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always try to leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here on The Dark Paranormal.
the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.